Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 4:20 p.m. and that is Central Time, and today is August 10th. Well, I thought I'd kick off with the 30-year yield. It's up to 4.25%, and this was an upside Q reversal in here today. So, inflationary pressures with CPI figures coming out today were not surprising. In fact, they came in almost exactly where they were expected to be. And even though on a year-over-year basis it was up, it was not up quite as much as investors were expecting. So the initial response was, oh, that's good news. And perhaps then the Fed is going to pause and at least skip a meeting. Maybe not pivot, but skip a meeting, see how things go. But then you have this rather weak demand for bonds at the 30-year auction. And this, of course, raises the specter that bond vigilantes are back in action and that they're not willing to accept 4.25%, but rather that they want more. And the potential here is that we're going to see a run back up towards the peak in October. Now, here, of course, is the rub. The higher yields go, the greater the pressure that's going to put on the bond markets, on the credit markets, on leverage loans, on mortgages. And of course, that is unsustainable beyond the short term. But for the moment at least, there's obviously the potential that yields will rise before they fall. And of course, then that is going to have a knock-on effect on lots of other asset classes. But this is a very different problem than we had back in October. Back in October, there was a lot of fear that inflation was not under control, but then yields came back down. And now, with inflation looking like it's at least behaving in line with expectations, the Fed has a different problem. They need to create an attractive enough market to create demand for bonds. And that means higher rates. So it raises the potential that they might be forced to continue to raise rates in order to support the treasury market. Now, that's a very different scenario than when inflation was running problematically. So then let's spin this around and look at how the Nasdaq formed today. So we had an initial rally and then it closed pretty close to the lower side of the range. Now it's pulling back into the underlying trading range. If it sustains a move down through 15,000, well, then that will have broken a midpoint danger line stop, and then any question about whether the trend is still consistent or not will have been solved. So I think it is more likely than not that we are going to have a full reversion back down towards the 200-day moving average. And especially, I think, when we look at this longer-term chart, we can see very clearly that the number of times when the index has been more than 2,000 points overextended relative to the EMA are really quite small. So there is ample scope for a reversion back down towards the mean. Now, of course, we're also in an interesting environment right now because we've gone through the earnings season and it wasn't particularly remarkable. Most companies, their guidance wasn't very favorable. But that's most particularly true of Apple because they have what we might describe as built-in redundancy into their products, but that also increases the cyclicality of sales because the kind of batteries they're using can only be recharged about 1,000 times, which means that there's going to be a predictable run-up of new customers every 3 years. Well, they sold a ton of phones in 2021, and that means that we're not going to have a big surprise in new demand for phones for Apple until 2024 at the earliest. And in between now and then, there is clear potential for the share to come back down and be in a more volatile range because, and we can see this if we look at the logarithmic scale chart, because then it becomes very clear that there have been plenty of times in the past when Apple has just gone sideways. And those sideways ranges have been really quite predictable. And I think now we're in another one of those. But then companies that have surprised on the upside with their earnings are being rewarded. CS Disco is an AI company that is very focused on the law sector, and it uses programs to find the best case law to support an argument. So the fact that it surprised on the upside is quite positive, because it was eviscerated during the big pullback in risk assets in 2021 and 22. Didn't bottom really until May of this year, but since then it has been performing better, and this is a completion of the base formation in here today. Now, when we then think about how this is all playing out in the wider economy, energy prices were a bit lower in here today on this movement in the bond markets. So oil prices were down about a dollar and pausing now in the region of the peaks that were put in between December and April of this year. Now, the sequence of higher reaction lows is still intact, and we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, provided that remains the case. Natural gas prices were also a little weaker in here today, and I think also taking its cue as well from the bond markets. And US price is pausing around the upper side of this base formation at about $3. But then it's also worth highlighting that the big pop on the upside we had yesterday, we didn't see follow through in Dutch markets today either. But I still think that it is quite likely that the lows that were put in back in June are probably about as low as European prices are going to go until we see clear efforts to either reduce demand by substitution or to ensure security of supply. Now, in terms of common sense solutions, the nuclear sector is the easy one. But politicians aren't particularly well known for common sense solutions. So it's going to have to require bipartisan support in pretty much every country that might want to build and or to achieve energy independence, a clear willingness to ignore the interests of vested interests. And of course, that is especially true for countries that have their own fossil fuel sectors, or indeed have their own renewable energy sectors. But what I think is, or at least the company that I think is most particularly representative of demand is Doosan Enerbility, because they supply the machinery for building nuclear reactors to all of the companies that are in the small modular reactor sector. And the share has a mild upward bias, but it has mostly been ranging for the last year. When it comes to actually building the small modular reactors, well, Samsung Heavy Industries is going to be doing that for Seaborg. And the share has now completed its base formation. And that was a pretty lengthy period of consolidation, stretching back for 7 years. But this has been a really substantial breakout over the last 6 months. And we are still at fractions of where the price was only about a decade ago. So there is certainly the potential that it is South Korea is going to be the big beneficiary from the build-out of small modular reactors. The most convincing business model I've seen has been to put these reactors on board ships, moor them offshore so that you're avoiding the planning mess, and just run cables. They can even be moored in international waters and you just run cables to the coastline. So you don't have to cite them, you don't have the same kind of NIMBY arguments, and you get the power. So I think that is something that is quite likely to occur. They're building them right now. The first is due to be delivered in 2026. They expect to be in commercial production by 2028. And that is a significantly faster timeline than we see with lots of the other companies. So when we then look at NuScale Power, well, they're doing pretty much the same thing, but they're buying from Doosan Enerbility, and the share continues to underperform. Well, there's a good reason for that. It's because Fluor, they got out of their traditional business, which is basically as a contractor and building stuff, and That really punished the company because they put in the seed capital to get NuScale off the ground. But now they're looking to sell it. So that pool of available supply is weighing on NuScale's share price. But it is now looking quite likely that Fluor will benefit from increasing demand for infrastructure and is certainly being given the benefit of the doubt as one of the main beneficiaries of the Inflation Reduction Act. So there's a lot of moving parts right now, and certainly with the continued march higher of the bond yields, well, that is likely to be a bullish factor for the dollar, and it has closed well off its lows in here today, still pausing in the region of the 200-day moving average. But if bond yields are going to move higher from here, then that's likely to be a at least a tailwind for as long as it lasts. Now, when we think about what's going on in China, well, Beijing today had a meeting and they invited all of the important property companies for another talk about how to support the economy. But they didn't invite Country Garden. And the share was down again in here today. And it does look likely that it's going to go bust. And this is the biggest privately held property developer in the country now that Evergrande is gone. So I think it is less informative to look at Country Garden than it is to pay attention to China Vanke, because that's a state-owned company. But it is still trending downwards and was in negative territory again in here today. And the Chinese economy, CPI and PPI, are both in negative territory now. So China's engaged in a deflation. And obviously, that's not great news for the property market, and there's the clear potential that we're going to have greater difficulty in reigniting demand. Now, one thing that China also did here today was to lift any travel restrictions. Now, that's great news for the tourist industry. In Cambridge last week, the volume of Chinese tourists on the street was really quite something to behold, and I think they probably had there was an equal number of tourists on the road than had to had comparable to just about everybody else. So that is seriously good news for companies like Marriott, and it has generally been the hotel companies have been the clear winners from the post-pandemic jump in demand for travel. The airlines have been much less impressive. For example, American Airlines has had a lot of difficulties getting people to where they want to go on time. And we've certainly been victims of that over the last month. We were delayed by 24 hours on the flight over to Europe, and the share is now pulling back. And of course, higher energy prices do weigh on the airlines. And then there are these lawsuits that are starting to arise about price fixing. And then airlines have also, with their dynamic pricing model, which is obviously something that people absolutely hate, and have figured out a way to take advantage of it, that you can book a multi-stage trip and then you just get off at the point that you want to in the first place, and you end up paying less by not taking the whole flight. And airlines absolutely hate that. They're trying to stop people from doing it, but there's not a lot they can do about it. And then, of course, you have continued worker militancy with inflationary pressures still uncomfortably high. People want more money. And UPS agreed a significant bump in pay and conditions for workers a couple of weeks ago. The share has had a downward bias for the last year and a half. It hasn't quite yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs. And it's balancing now between the rebound in demand for Amazon relative to the volume of cash they're going to have to pay to their workers. And we're in a very tight, rather balanced environment. And when the break comes, Whether that is on the upside or the downside, it's likely to be rather important. And we're also starting to now see demand from unions for additional pay at both Ford and GM. And both companies estimate that they could be on the hook for an additional $80 billion each. So both are now pulling back from their recent recoveries. And there are lots of lawsuits that are waiting in the wings to assail Tesla. And the share continues to pull back from the region of the peak from back in late 2022 and the psychological 300 level. So at least it is going to unwind the overbought condition relative to the 200-day moving average. But the number of cases that are being thrown at Tesla, whether it is about the exaggerated claims about self-driving or the fact that when people are using the self-driving, then it is driving into tractor trailers, even driving into police cars. So obviously that's not great news. And now you also have people worrying about the range, the range of a car being reported at over 300 miles, and that it is less than half that. And all of this, of course, is problematic when you're the largest automotive company in the world, and the valuation is still extraordinary. So we're still at a market cap of 778 billion. And certainly the PE has come in, but there are important questions about the ability of EVs to actually sell on a wider market basis. I remember chatting maybe 6 months ago to the owner of a number of dealerships in Oklahoma, and what he was saying was that Ford was forcing those dealerships that he owns to stock electric vehicles, but his primary business is selling pickup trucks because they're rural dealerships, and he was basically told that if he didn't agree to sell electric vehicles, install electric vehicle chargers, then they would no longer give him the vehicles, and that he would the total value of his business would disappear. But of course, how are you going to sell an electric vehicle to someone who wants to tow a trailer? And they wouldn't get more than about 10 miles towing a trailer. And obviously, this is a problem. So there is obviously the possibility that the demand for electric vehicles could peak out. Or it could plateau, and that the early adopters that are willing to deal with range anxiety or don't ever wish to take a longer journey than a couple hundred miles, then maybe that will be enough to support the business. But if the other 80% of people aren't willing to buy electric vehicles, that's obviously a problem, considering the volume of money that has been poured into the sector. And of course, that also has a knock-on effect for some of the lithium companies. So Livent is coming back in to test the region of the 1,000-day moving average. It's been ranging now for nearly 2 years, and it's a little oversold in the short term, so we might see some additional upside. Of course, the lithium price has been exceptionally volatile. We had a very deep decline last year, a big rebound in the early part of this year, and now the price is back in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. I think there is a good chance that the lows were put in the middle of this year, but it's going to have to hold the 200,000 level if that is in fact the case. So as we look around the world, the risks are increasing that we're at the point where the run-up in yields and the length of time that bond yields have been this high is beginning to take a toll. And then we also have the yield curve spread, where it has been inverted for a really quite lengthy time already, and the spread continues to increase. So the long end of the curve is catching up with the short end of the curve. It's usually the other way around. It's usually the fact that it is sharply lower short-term interest rates in response to much weaker economic activity is what drives the steepening of the yield curve. On this occasion, it's worries about the demand for longer dated bonds that is pushing those yields up faster than the shorter end of the curve. And that kind of activity, where we don't get the interest rates, but we interest rate cuts, but we do get a steepening yield curve, then that turns into an exceptionally interesting environment, because that those a jump in those longer dated yields means that those longer dated bonds become progressively more attractive in terms of yield. And then they act as a hurdle over which every other asset class has to jump in order to be more attractive. And I think that is the primary reason why we're going to have additional downside in the stock markets. And then, of course, that wild card with regard to Chinese property and what that means for the wider commodity complex. Let's not forget that just give you the example. I've been to the first two of the Future Minerals Forum events in Saudi Arabia, which are entirely devoted to mining. And there is an unquestioning belief that there's going to be a massive bull market in copper. But that is not what the price is telling us. We had a massive reaction against the prevailing trend a year ago, and the price continues to ease back. So if this is a new bull trend, well, then copper will have to start improving from here. But it is really more about Chinese demand, where they consume more than half of all global copper, is going to have to steady up before the demand dominance question will really come back to the fore. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.